On this episode of video... see, I already screwed it up.
We should save these for something. I don't know what, but...
The Christmas party.
Yeah, there we go, yeah.
On this special episode of Video Culture, we'll talk home video formats. Yes, that's right, no movies. It's a very special episode, folks.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills, there will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
Hello and welcome to Video Culture. I'm your host, Ryan Acree.
And I'm your other host, Matthew Essery.
And today we're not going to be talking about any movie in particular. We're only going to be talking about home video formats and how those home video formats really came to be. And also, more importantly, how they changed how we watch movies.
Well, Ryan, I just want to say right away, change frightens me. So I'm a little scared and worried, but I'm here with you, buddy.
Scared and worried? What are you talking about?
No movies, man.
It'll be fine.
What would Roger Ebert think?
Let's just talk about how we even came up with the idea for this episode. Yes. And I think that maybe help explain why we're talking about this and why it's so important to talk about and to bring up in a whole episode.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of it is, this is something you and I actually talk about quite a bit in our downtime. You and I both find it very interesting. But what really started it was, you picked up a new hobby recently, which we talked about on a previous episode. But why don't you tell the people at home about your hobby?
So it all started. I guess I've always been sort of a techno historian. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've always loved to sort of explore, different technologies and how they sort of change our culture and that sort of thing. And I've always been into audio, and I've always been into like radio, and I sort of understand that whole, you know, those paradigms, and I've never really explored a lot of video stuff. I've always, we had a VCR and then like went straight to DVD, but there was this time in between VHS and DVD where there was this very expensive format called Laserdisc.
Yeah. It was a very volatile time in home
media. Very much. And so, but one day, me and my wife were out shopping. We were at just a secondhand store, and they had all these VHS tapes that were like $1.
Yeah.
And some of them were movies that were on our list, that we were on our planned list for another episode to be named later, or they were just enjoyable movies like Star Wars or Indiana Jones. Or they were movies that we had already watched that were on our
which list. You felt kind of nostalgic about. Like, hey, this is part of our journey.
Yeah. Like, if I can watch it, you can watch a movie somewhere. Like, hey, why have a VHS player have, tapes if you're not going to, like, watch them, right? Mm-hmm. So, I have vinyl. I have, records and all that kind of stuff. So I was just like, why don't you have these other formats? And I knew, because I had a roommate who just consumed media. And maybe we'll have him on our show one day. And Justin Smith, if you're listening, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But he has, lots of movies on Laserdisc. And I knew that there were things that were on Laserdisc that you couldn't get on DVD or not released maybe at the time. Okay. Now they have because of like Blu-ray and all these special editions. But, in the time in like the early 2000s, if you wanted to watch, Twin Peaks, like in those episodes, the only way to get it was to watch it on Laserdisc.
Well, and you bring up an interesting point about home video formats. Every time there's a change in home video formats, stuff does get lost.
Right.
Like, there's stuff that came out on Laserdisc that never went to DVD. And stuff on DVD that never went to Blu-ray. So every new generation, we're losing a few more titles here and there. And I'm a film person. I'd almost say I'm kind of a mild film historian.
Right.
And that makes me very sad to think some of these things are being lost.
Well, yeah, I mean, the same thing happens in music. I mean, you have live recordings that are on vinyl or that are on this format that never get, you know, only the great hits or the great stuff gets moved over. And, you know, that's why the Library of Congress has, you know, they go to great depths to preserve and to archive all these recordings and things like that from the media that already sort of exists.
Yeah.
But I also have realized that a lot of the titles that we are doing for this podcast are available on Laserdisc.
Almost, I would say probably almost all of them, because we're really working from very certain time periods. We're not doing anything too modern.
I don't think. Well, yeah, because I mean, I think even Event Horizon is probably on.
Event Horizon, when it came out in 90, it was 97, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, we did.
It's bound to be on Laserdisc.
That's one of the more modern movies that we did. We did Airheads. I mean, that's
yeah.
That's still
98, but. Right. But that's a digression, yeah. So.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's been probably the most modern, you know, movie that we have done on the show. And, you know, they stopped producing Laserdiscs in 2001. Okay. So there's really no more sort of U.S. media past this point, you know, because I have the figures here, but by 1998, Laserdiscs were only, you know, in 2% of homes at that time. And you figure, like, God, my gosh, like 2%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like, that's nothing. That's a drop in the bucket, man. Yeah. This is like nothing. And it has to do a lot of different factors and video rental and stuff like that we'll get into.
Yeah.
But I just kind of wanted to use that as an intro, as a catalyst to why we want to talk about it.
Of course, but Bob, and finish your story. So you started thinking about Laserdiscs.
So, yeah, I bought a Laserdisc player. We'll talk about but what I'm finding mostly about Laserdiscs is I had to buy like three Laserdisc players. Because I bought, you know, one on eBay, it arrived, it didn't work, got a refund. Bought another one, it arrived, it worked, but then it wouldn't flip, it wouldn't play the other side. So I took the cover off and then eventually it just stopped playing altogether. I didn't do anything with it. It just, I don't know what happened. I can't figure it out. I like electronics and I can't figure it out. So then I had to, a local friend had one that I got for really cheap. Thank you, Landon. That I actually have one that works.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, now I get to enjoy the format and I get to actually have a small collection. But what I found is, because of the players and because of the stuff was like so complicated, it's such a complicated system to play back, is that the scarcity, you know, you figure that the media would be hard to find, you know, just like if you wanted to play like 78s, you know, like right now, they would be kind of hard to find. But no, Laserdisc are like everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to the local media store. They're there. They don't have a lot, but they're about $1, $2 a piece.
You found Dragnet. Shout out to our previous episode.
Yeah. I mean, after we already watched it, I found it for like $1. I was like, well, hey, now I have it on Laserdisc.
It's worth it just for Tom Hanks and his yo-yo.
Yeah. Yeah. Pep Strebeck. So, yeah. And I mean, I think it's a really fun medium because it's just like this big 12-inch disc.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah,
it's actually an analog format, like the contrary to belief. Yeah. But
for that's what I want to bring up. For anyone who's younger and has never actually seen a Laserdisc, imagine like a vinyl album, but for a movie. So it's got this big, beautiful cover art, and these fold the cases open up like albums, like old vinyl albums, and they're so pretty and cool to hold in your hand. It will always be neater to me than any digital download.
I mean, people originally thought they were like the soundtrack, you know, like the album soundtrack to them or something like that.
It really looks like a big silver record. It's like a gigantic DVD.
But when you see it in the store, you just see, you know, like the movie, like, you know, kind of like it looks like the poster. And you're like, oh, this is the soundtrack. Like, no, it's the actual movie, like on Laserdisc. Like, this is Laserdisc.
Yeah, it bears a big resemblance in the packaging to a record. It's the same dimensions, you know. Mm-hmm. Give kids at home an idea of what these things look like in person. To me, they look really cool. Like, the minute you told me you were going to get into this, my eyes lit up because I've been a movie fan forever.
Right.
And when I was a kid, I thought Laserdisc sounded so cool because you could get director's commentaries. Back then, there's some of the times it was the only way to get movies in their original aspect ratios. But back then, Laserdiscs were very expensive.
Right. Like, yeah, the players were very expensive. Like, and even the actual media was very expensive.
Yeah, too. I think on average, a Laserdisc would cost you about $100 a lot of times.
Yeah, it kind of dropped in price over time. Some of the later titles, would drop to like $35 or $50, $50 to $35.
But when you compare it to finding like DVDs in like the bargain bin of Walmart for $5, $30 on the low end, that's still expensive. And like the nice special editions, those were like triple digits sometimes.
Right. Well, you have to remember at this time period, even to own a VHS copy of a movie was very expensive.
It was, yeah. Those rental copies, they weren't priced to sell.
No, they weren't priced to sell. I mean, and I remember people buying, you know, if you wanted to buy like Bambi, you know, it was like $25 for like a VHS.
Yeah, like I had a friend who loved Pulp Fiction. Me and him saw it in the theater several times. And when it was coming out on video, he wanted to buy it. He wanted to watch it that badly. So when it came out for rental, he's like, I want to buy a copy. And the video store guy was like, you want to buy one of these? He's like, yes. How much is it? He goes, it's $95.
Yeah.
And that's a pan and scan videotape, VHS tape.
Yep.
And the guy was like, $95 and it's yours. Right. And that's how much it cost.
I mean, and that was the cost of the video store. I mean, he wasn't marking it up.
Yeah.
If he was to actually mark it like price it like a store, it would have been, you know, $145 probably.
Yeah.
If he wanted to make any money off of it. Yeah. I mean, he was probably doing the guy a favor for buying it at his price.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Was.
And my friend bought that and he wore that tape out. But that's just to get perspective on what we're dealing with and how much of a novelty home video formats were in a way.
Yes.
It was a true luxury item.
Well, let's talk about video formats like from the beginning. Let's talk about how they sort of came to be. So from my notes, the very first sort of format that was sold that wasn't like a commercial format, that was actually, you know, direct to consumer video format was Betamax or, Sony Beta.
Yeah.
Call it whatever that you want. And this was Sony's invention. It came out in 1975. And just to give you an idea of resolution, it had 250 lines of resolution.
To put that in perspective, standard resolution now, non-HD resolution now, is 480.
Right.
So you're talking about less than half of the basic non-high def resolution that we have nowadays.
Right.
That's like poor YouTube quality.
Right. And they kind of based the idea on the actual, like a smaller version of the professional, what's called the U-matic format.
Mm-hmm.
U-matic is like a 3/4-inch tape. It's like what all the TV stations use. It's what everything is basically in standard definition is recorded on by, you know, countless numbers of television stations or standard definition television. But you only got 60 minutes. All right, and then Sony did not license this to other manufacturers, okay? So there was very little that was on like a pre-recorded format. Like their whole idea was going to be, it was going to be more of a format like you record TV so you can watch later.
Yeah, basically, they didn't really consider the idea that people would want to buy films.
Right.
This is not what you did culturally. You didn't do that. You watched them in the theater, and movies would come out sometimes multiple times. Like Star Wars would play a couple times every year, or like Bambi would play 2 or 3 times a year at your local theater.
Mm-hmm.
You would just see it again when it came back out.
Yeah.
And certain smaller movies, if you didn't see it that one time, you'd hope they played it on cable later on. Very different world.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it was the ABC movie of the week or something like that.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't, but it was more of a recording format. It was more like we're going to record once on, you know, kind of like the same way. Cause you know, not cassettes, but it was more we're going to record what's on, you know, TV, not license it for movies or pre-recorded.
It was meant to be a tool for people at home. Like, I want to watch the football game.
Yeah, because it was a recordable format, you know? So, but then VHS came out like a year later And VHS was developed by JVC, or the Japanese Victor Corporation.
Yes.
Which JVC started off of the Japanese branch of RCA. So you can read about their history if you want to. That's boring, boring, boring.
Wikipedia,
but,
kids.
Yeah, Wikipedia, guys. So, but in 1976, they had 240. So Beta had 250. They had 240.
That's a little known fact that Betamax was a better format than VHS.
Right. JVC, one of the things that they did, so there was like a format war, right? That were like, were you going to get Sony Beta or you're going to get, you're going to get VHS. And the Sony players were actually not only was it a better format, but the players were better. And the reason why is because Sony was putting, like, they were investing in this, and they were putting, like, all this new technology in this.
Yeah.
They were building, like, you know, things that would, like, really last. Yeah. And JVC was just like, well, this is just a format. Like, we made this format, so now we're going to license it to whomever. Like, we'll license it to Matsushita. We'll license it to, so Mitsubishi can make something. Yeah. We'll license it to Toshiba. We'll do whatever. Like, it's just a format. Like, we made this format. Now you can pay us for the license to use this format to make your tapes or to make stuff.
We don't necessarily care about quality. Just pay us and you can use it.
You can use it and put the VHS logo on it and it's yours.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing about VHS, though, that was different was the recording time. So you can actually get 4 hours recorded onto VHS that you couldn't get. Like, you can only get like an hour on. And they expanded the time to like an hour and a half or like an hour and 40 minutes like later on in later formats. But it's like, my gosh, like 4 hours on a tape. Some people say that, you know, this format war kind of, you know, came out because, because you said it before, like there was more.
There's the rumor that the pornography industry.
The adult film industry.
Let's be fair. The adult film industry. I apologize.
All right.
Was the one who tipped the scales for VHS. That's always been the common myth among film fans.
I mean, it might have been because they had more affordable players because there were more players out there. There were more stuff. So like it was a little bit cheaper entry point. But what tipped the scales was really you had 4 hours on a VHS. So it could record a football game.
Yeah. I know. It was a big deal to me as a kid because, I mean – when we got those free previews of HBO, during the brief time periods when we didn't have HBO when I was a kid, we would tape, just hours of movies and watch them over and over again.
Right.
Or even when I was a teenager getting into, like, more obscure, like, cult movies, I'd go to random video stores across town finding all the weird stuff I could, and then I would tape them onto my own tapes, sometimes 2 and 3 movies to a tape, just to save space because, tapes were bulky.
Right.
And I only had so much space in my bedroom as a teenager. So I had these stacks of, like, long play videotapes with like 3 movies on them with little tiny writing on the labels so you could tell what they were. And I would just watch those tapes over and over again.
Yeah. But I mean, you can read about like all the different format wars, and there's even a Wikipedia article explaining the videotape format wars. So if you want to get into the technical nuances and all the different like versions of Beta and all of the advances that they had and to improve the picture quality or improve the sound, but how it changed, like you're saying, like you now have a format, like you can have a movie that you saw in the theater.
Yeah.
And then later on, or maybe you missed it in the theater, and then later on you can actually like buy it, but they're really expensive because these studios were like, well, if you're buying it, you're basically buying a license for it to show it to other people, and you can basically like make copies of it. Like Hollywood was very afraid that people were going to make like dubs and make like multiple copies.
Yeah.
And there is a generation loss, because it's an analog format. There is a generation loss, like every time you record it. But still, so that's why, I mean, I remember there were the days that it was like, they came out like a movie would first come out in the theaters, and then like later on you would see it in like the dollar movie theater. Yes. Then you would see it like in the video rental store, We'll talk about video rental stores in just a second, because this is, you know, this is a big sort of like influence of our show. But then after that, it would be on HBO. And then maybe after the HBO run for a little while, then it would be on like USA or TBS, you know. And really the span of when a movie came out to when it was in the video store
was a long time back.
It's like
then.
Almost a year sometimes.
It was sometimes more than that. Like something that younger listeners won't realize, there used to be sometimes 18 months between a theater run and where you could see it on home video. Nowadays that window is as short as a month.
Well, part of that, wasn't it true, because they were worried about like international, like somebody getting a copy, because they're still running it in other, you know, countries. They're still running other movies, and they didn't want like copies like flooding the market or something.
Basically, all these decisions were based out of a fear of piracy.
Right.
And they were so afraid of movie pirates, and they're still afraid of movie pirates. The formats have just changed.
Right.
But everything, some of the decisions are all based on that. But yeah, there used to be such a long wait between seeing something in a theater and then being able to see it at home. And and even up until like the late 90s, it was still a novelty to have a video collection of VHS. It's like I was in college and VHS was still a thing. It was in its final days.
Right.
But VHS was still a thing. And it was a novelty for the people who lived in my dorm room when I was in college. Mm-hmm. But, oh, Matt's got a movie collection. Let's go watch movies at Matt's dorm. Because he's got like 40 movies.
Right.
And they would just go through, like, hey, let's watch Tombstone again, or let's watch Aliens.
Yeah.
Or let's watch, you know, Shaw Brothers Kung Fu movies, or like, you know, Christopher Lee as Dracula. Because I had all these random things. And I'm like, that's so cool. Why do you have these? I'm like, that's my thing. But it wasn't common back then. It didn't become common until DVD.
Right.
The DVD was so inexpensive.
Right. But going back to video, to the video store and to creating this video store, because these movies were very sort of like, very sort of expensive. I mean, and this is what led to the rise of video stores, because nobody really wanted to buy the movie.
No.
Like, say, you know, say I want to watch, you know, like, say I missed Misery in the theater, okay? I want to watch Misery. People said it was a great movie. Stephen King movie, you know, Kathy Bates. I don't know if I would really own it. Because it's kind of a hard watch, you know?
It is a hard watch.
So it's like, but I really want to see this movie because people are talking about it. And it seems like a good kind of movie. So I go to the video store and I can rent it. So you would get like a membership. Like you would, I mean, video stores, when they first started, because it was such a high price to buy them, you used to have to pay to be a member.
Yeah, you had to give them a credit card. You had to give them ID, you know.
Right. But no, you had to pay like an entry fee. Like if you want to be like $25 or $35 just to be able to rent from the store.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't until later, like you could just, like anybody could be a member.
No,
like,
yeah, but that took a while. That was like, you know, before it was free. Yeah, that was well into the lifespan of the video store for sure.
Right. It was kind of like a, you know, exercise club or something like that.
It was. And it was really... People just, they kind of treat it like they treat Netflix now. They're like, oh, if I want to watch Misery again, I'll just go to the local video store and rent it. It'll be, you know, $3. I'll watch it and take it back. It'll always be there.
Right.
You know, the video store is always going to be there. Misery's always going to be on the shelf. I can rent it whenever. Not a big deal.
Right. Or maybe if I watch it once, I don't want to own it. Well, that's fine.
Yeah,
well,
I saw it.
Right. But maybe it's in the middle section or something like that. Like, you know, I want to watch it later. Somebody hasn't seen it and they want to watch it again.
Yeah,
like, it wouldn't be on the new release, like, border section or whatever. But, I mean, this is what led rise to, like, Blockbuster and all these other places. And I even remember, and you might even remember, too, where you would go into... The grocery store would even have a video rental within the grocery store.
They would have like a wall of videos for some reason. Yeah.
Right. And it was always close to the frozen food section. So maybe you get like a frozen pizza and like a movie.
It was. Maybe it's because the cold was better for the tapes. I don't know.
I don't know.
But you're like, right. It was, in my hometown, it was too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's got to seem really weird to young listeners. But yeah, they used to have grocery stores used to have like a little video section. And you could rent like, you know, I'm trying to think of a
good one. I mean, it wouldn't
be Farther the Bride and then buy a frozen pizza with it, you know?
Yeah. I mean.
And you know what? It was awesome.
Yeah. You can rent like Goonies and then like go home and watch it. I mean, it was just like, they didn't have a lot of stuff. It was always first runner movies.
Yeah.
And I remember that's the first time I ever saw an actual Betamax. It was like, there was a small section like on the bottom shelf, like close to the register that was like the, you know, 10 or 20 Betamax movies that they had or whatever. So, and it was always like, you know, there were always like the Columbia, like Sony releases. But
in my hometown, I grew up in Temple, Mississippi, which is the birthplace of Elvis for any people out there who are curious about trivia. But anyway, in my hometown, video stores all sprouted up around the same area to the point where all video stores were on the same block. Mm-hmm. It was, and they literally renamed the street on that area Video Row.
Wow.
And there were six video stores on this street. And it was awesome. That's part of the reason why I'm so into movies, because I would go to one video store. If they didn't have what I was looking for, I would just walk to the next one.
Wow.
And I could literally just do the entire loop in like an hour.
Yeah. I mean, you don't know the pain of like wanting to watch a movie
and then not having
like
it.
That's the movie that came out the rental, and it's like not available. It's like somebody took
it's
it.
Like, it's like, damn it, I want to watch Chud.
I don't know if anybody wants.
Hey, Chud's good.
Well, I know, but like the movie, the movie of the, you know, whatever. Because it's always like there was, it seems like, you know, video rentals too. And I don't know if you remember this, but video rentals as well, like just were kind of planned in the same sort of way as like movies are their regular releases, mm-hmm. so that they wouldn't like sort of step on each other.
Yeah, they were staggered. Yeah.
Yeah, they were staggered. And they would also, so like in the wintertime was like the best time the movies would come out. You know what I'm saying?
Because all the big summer, they would start to come out, the summer releases would start to appear.
Yeah.
Yeah, or and they'd have, but you'd have like the big release for the week, and then you'd have like this kind of mid tier release for the week.
Yeah,
and then you'd have like four or five like low grade like Troma or like Full Moon like Puppet Master nonsense coming out. It was staggered in that way, and it was that's just how it worked. It was much like theater releasing for
I mean, and this is the way this is the growth of like the 80s and 90s, like Hollywood. And this is why these guys, like these actors and actresses would do 3 and 4 movies a year, because they may be in one big movie, but they were also in like three kind of like other movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it became supplemental income from them, because then it became royalties, not just from TV play, but they got royalties from videos.
Right.
Every video sold, they got a piece of. So
right, and some were even like direct-to-video. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The direct-to-video market, that changed filmmaking too, because then you could get little movies, like I joke about Chud, but you could get like little small horror films or like imported martial arts movies or like, you know, foreign films that you'd never get a chance to see otherwise. Video stores would stock them because they had to have stuff on the shelves. So they would have like the weird movies next to the Hollywood blockbusters because they had to have content for their shelves.
Right. So I don't know about your household and how your parents were, but we never really had a lot of pre-recorded VHS tapes.
No, not really.
And if you owned a VHS, they were very expensive. You didn't find them in the stores. They weren't at Walmart. They weren't at Target, you know?
Yeah,
they were
until I had my own money, the only VHS tapes I had were Batman and Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
I had my own money.
Right. You might see some of the children's movies at like Walmart or Target. But like I said, it was like Bambi or Cinderella would come out. And it would be like, you know, the special edition. It would be like $25 or $30.
Yeah.
You know, for it. And you're like, wow, like really? Or, you know, Aristocats or something like that. Like a lot of people had like, you know, these older movies, these older, you know, Disney movies, animated movies that would be on VHS or whatever. But yeah, you didn't find like, you know, I mean, maybe you'd find Star Wars or something like that.
But you wouldn't be watching like Lucas to reference one of the movies that we watched, or you wouldn't have like Beastmaster, you know, or Fast Times at Ridgemont High, or you know, The Road Warrior. You wouldn't have those tapes.
No.
If you know a guy who had The Road Warrior or like Evil Dead 2, he was the coolest kid in school because he had these really, you know, badass movies at his house.
Yeah. So getting into how the technology sort of changed, you had the video disc or, you know, so there is this kind of like in-between format called video disc. I won't spend a lot of time on it. Yeah. Some people call it CED or capacitance.
I find these things super fascinating because I did not know they existed until about 2 years ago.
So they look like a really big cartridge, but in it is a disc, and it kind of looks like a laser disc. They get a lot of confusion with laser discs, mm-hmm. But it, lasers have nothing to do with this format, yeah. Okay? There's an actual, like, sort of... they used a groove.
It's got kind of a like a record technology. It's got like a needle in.
Yes.
Which is mind-blowing to me. Like, that sounds like wizardry to me. Like,
well, it's just like how a vinyl record works. I mean, that's how the audio works.
Yeah.
And it would just sync up with the video format, which was on, like, the outer edge. So it was like a 12-inch disc on the inside. But what they found is... that, like, the fingerprints or, like, whatever, the dust would just, like, cause it to just, like, kind of loop back on itself and it wouldn't move forward. And so they had to put it in the...
Yeah, they basically built cases for them that you couldn't take them out of it. You loaded the cartridge into the player and the machine would basically spit the empty cartridge back out to you.
Yeah.
And when you wanted to take it out, you slid the cartridge back in. The machine would load the disc back into the cartridge, so you never actually touched the cartridge.
Nope.
Which is, it's pretty fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because it's not like a floppy disk or like a small, like sort of 3.5-inch floppy. It was more just like, you know, where you put the floppy in and just leave it there. Yeah, you put the cart, you put the carrier, like it was just,
It was like a record in a box.
Yeah, and it had the label on the outside and everything. It was kind of weird. But here's a weird thing I found. Okay, so RCA, this came out in 1981, okay? They started working on it in like 1964.
Really?
Yeah. So RCA was trying to develop it all themselves. It was like a multi-layered disc of like vinyl and metal. It was only 60 minutes per side. Mm. And they finally released it to the public in 1981. They kind of developed some better players by like 1983. So RCA had hoped by 1985 that would be close to 50% of American homes. But... you know,
that did not happen.
No, and this is a non-recordable format. Yeah. It's only like, you know, pre-recorded basically. Yeah. And so RCA, like, this wasn't happening. People weren't buying it because they were like, what is this weird technology? Like, movies that I buy at home? Like, people were just like, no, I just like turn on my TV and like, you know.
There were some other limitations to it that I discovered through my own research. Apparently, a lot of the movies that were released on it were actually edited down to work better with the shorter running times. Yeah. So you couldn't even get full movies on a lot of those. Like you would get like the highlights of Raiders of the Lost Ark. You'd get the highlights of The Last Starfighter.
Yeah, so they could fit it on one side.
Yeah, think about how annoying that would be if you loved movies.
Yeah, so you didn't have to flip it. No, and some of them would actually speed up stuff. Yeah. So it wasn't even, that's even weirder, right? Yeah. To have it like see that sort of more fast forward. So, but... This is the funniest thing. So RCA attempted to cut the price of the players and offer special incentives to consumers such as rebates and free discs, but sales only slightly improved. So they realized that they would never be profitable. So they announced the discontinuation in like April of 1984. So they said, okay, we're going to discontinue the format. This is not profitable for us. So the demand of video discs, we were like, okay, so the people that had video discs were like, oh, we better buy all the media we can because there's not going to be any more. So the video discs became, you know, highly sought after. So RCA alerted customers that video discs could be continued to be produced and new titles be released for at least another 3 years after the discontinue of players.
That is so weird.
So once they did that, then... the demand went down because they're like, oh, we're still going to get movies for another 3 years. So then RCA abandoned the disc production only after 2 years in 1986. Yeah. So they didn't continue
That's still a super short window for a format.
Yeah, so 1983 or 1981 and then like out in 1986. Well, we got a shorter format coming up.
Yeah, that one's really interesting to me.
So we're going to...
I love this stuff, Ryan. I don't know if I've told you this, but I love this kind of thing, man.
So, but Laserdisc... All right. I'm going to tell you a name and everybody who has a CD... has and their lives have benefited from a CD, a DVD, a Laserdisc, a Blu-ray, has like any sort of optical disc format, has this guy to think named David Paul Gregg or Dr. David Paul Gregg. He invented optical disc technology in 1962. He patented it in 1962.
That's like some Men in Black like stuff. You wouldn't think it'd be that old.
So, and He's from America. He did it in California.
USA. USA.
So he actually came up with the idea like 1958. He worked for this company, Westrex, which was a division of Western Electric. And he patented this technology. Mm-hmm. This technology, basically, he tried to develop into a video format. So he partnered up with two other guys, and then he went to work for 3M. 3M decided, well, we don't want you working on it. We're going to send it off to Stanford because they're basically going to develop it for free, you know, because some professor is going to get like, you know, some...
We'll make a bunch of grad students do it.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So the David Paul Gregg says, forget it then. If you're going to do all that, then I don't want a part of it. Yeah. Like, you're killing all my fun here. Yeah. So they, like, 3M still had the technology at that point. So they sold it to MCA. And they purchased all of the patents for this optical test technology in 1968.
That's such a long time ago.
Right. So, it's mind-blowing
to think about.
Right. And this is, but he only created it in a, what they call like a transparent mode. Mm-hmm. So Philips in 1969, they were working on an optical disc, but they got it to work in like a reflective mode. But they still couldn't figure a lot of stuff out. So they partnered with MCA to create the LaserDisc. So you have Philips, who's, you know, German company. Mm-hmm. You have MCA. And then Pioneer comes in. They come in about 10 years later in 1978 as a 50-50 joint venture. But because originally they developed it in 1958, it was... because they still had to create some sort of player. They still had to create some sort of way. They developed the technology and worked on it and improved on it for another 10 years. And then Pioneer had to come up with the player. And it came out in... So LaserDisc have been out since 1978.
Yeah, I didn't realize they were that old. Because, again, my first memories of LaserDiscs were, again, going back to my childhood in Video Row. There was one video store on that row that had LaserDiscs, and I thought they were so intriguing because they had, again, the big cover artwork. They were like these giant things that were fascinating to my little, like, preteen mind.
Right.
But that had to be, like, 1987 right. when I saw this. That's many years after they first came out. I had no idea they were that old.
Yeah, neither did I. I thought they were just from, like, the 80s. Like, yeah. I was just like, oh, I thought it came out, like, the late 80s because I remember... hearing something a little bit about the technology and I mean, because I think Pioneer really did a lot of push kind of in the 90s, like in the early 90s, to kind of push the technology and try to promote the technology because then they started licensing out to other players. Because Sony was involved, you had Sony. I mean, and this technology from the video disc also created the audio CD. Mm-hmm. So this also came, you know, CDs came out in like 1978. So that's coming along. So you have CDs revolutionizing audio, and they thought the same thing would happen with video. Like, we're going to have this video. And to give you an idea of the quality, 240 lines on VHS, LaserDisc, 420.
And that's still, that's a huge step up.
That is huge. That's almost, you know, full quality.
Yeah, that at that point, that's basic standard definition. But at the time, that was mind blowing.
Yeah, I mean, they improved the audio. The audio was a little bit weird at first because it was like analog. Because remember, LaserDisc is an analog format, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a composite video format, like on like a laser, you know, whatever. And Pioneer improved the technology. They figured out a way to put digital because we have this digital CD technology. So why don't we combine the two? Come on now.
Yeah.
And then Dolby gets involved and comes up with their surround formats, you know, that they're putting on, you know, their AC3 format. And but then you have to have all these complicated decoders to decode surround sound. So now we're getting into not only are we having the video and the video quality, but now we want the sound and the sound quality and like the speakers in front of us and behind us and, you know, we're creating this home theater. It becomes more than just
that. Really was the beginning of people thinking I can have the movie experience in my home,
but only if you bought all of these expensive stuff. Because it wasn't just like you buy one thing.
Yeah,
it's like you got to buy all these other things too.
But it was definitely the genesis of that thought process. Like, you started to see more like home theater magazines and reviewing of like receivers and what are the best subwoofers and speakers to play DTS sound. And that was the beginning of the I want to build a little theater in my home.
Well, this is the beginning of the Criterion Collection, where you have the Criterion is basically their whole sort of mantra, or their sort of like, what do they call it? Their philosophy or
basically
is to have the best version of the theater version, like in your home,
basically as much archival basically archiving these important films as much as the formats will allow. And what that translates to is the Criterion Collection from the days of Laserdisc until now are kind of like the Cadillac of home video formats of whatever the dominant format is at the time.
Right. But you have to remember, even though this technology came out, players were super, super expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, people could pick up, like, even VHS was expensive. And VHS was, $300 for a VHS player, say. Mm-hmm. Laserdisc was, like, $1,000 for the base model.
And it didn't have any of the utilitarian functions that a VHS player. You couldn't record on it.
Nope.
So it was strictly for, I want to watch movies or I want to watch concert films.
So, yeah, but it's kind of like one of those chicken and the egg things. Like, video stores, they were very expensive to buy, but video stores didn't want to buy them either because there's not that many people that have players that will watch them. So it's like, you know, people have already sort of accepted. Like, Sony got into this Betamax war thinking that people are going to want better quality. And it was like, no, people just want to watch movies at home.
They want affordability.
Yeah, they want affordability. So, you know, the same thing with Laserdisc. People, like, you know, Pioneer thought, like, oh, they want higher quality. And it's like, no, they just want their format. So a lot of people didn't buy a Laserdisc player and just went straight to DVD. And so,
well, it didn't quite go straight to DVD. There's a thing you're glossing over there, and that's our little friend, probably one of the most ill-advised formats of all time, the DivX.
Well, DivX, when was DivX out? No, that was later.
Was it
DVD,
really?
Yeah. DVD came out in like 1995, and it was still really expensive. Just like, you know, like when CD players first came out, they were like 10 grand, right? For like a player. Like, you want to play like 10 grand. And then like the next year, they were like 5 grand. And then like the next year after that, they were like 3 grand. And then so that's what kind of happened. And the same thing happened with DVD. Like, the first players that came out were like 10 grand. And then like later they were like, but they're, because DVDs already accepted the CD format, a lot of the stuff translated. So you had like, oh, we just had to have all these other pieces. Well, we already have a tray mechanism. We already have lasers. We can improve our lasers a little bit. Okay. We already have this mechanism that drives the laser back and forth. We already have a motor system. We already have a feedback loop system that monitors the speed and location. Like, you know, so the technology, like the basis for DVD was already sort of there. So they just had to adapt it, and they just had to improve on it. So DVDs were able, I mean, the first DVD players that I saw were like, they were like $800, $900.
I remember seeing
them. That's very affordable. When you're thinking like, should I get a video disc? Should I get laser disc? Like, say you're 1995. Should I buy this $1,000 laser disc player, or should I buy this $800, you know, DVD player?
And a lot of the DVD players at the time also played CDs. Now, not all of them did, but some of them did. And that was kind of the beginning of also thinking, well, I want my media machine to do more than one thing.
Yeah, I mean, in Pioneer, some of the later Laserdisc players that they made in the late 90s could play all three formats.
Yeah, but that was DVD, almost a little, Laserdisc, too late. Yeah.
A little too late by that time. But but still, I mean, when you consider, in the mid... So talking about video, and so DVDs get like adopted very quickly. I mean, people have already accepted music on their, you know, this disc format, then it's like, okay, now we fit it all on this smaller format too, the video. Like, it was easy.
Yeah. And it saved on space. They weren't nearly as bulky as videotapes or laser discs.
Right.
They were so much smaller.
Here's the other thing I found out that I didn't know either, that you may or may not know, that there was also almost another format war that we had with VHS.
Are you talking about DVHS, Ryan?
No, I'm talking about MMCD and another format called, what is it, SD? Or, sorry, super density discs.
I have not heard of those.
So, Sony Philips made the MMCD, and Toshiba and Time Warner, Matsushita, Hitachi, Mitsubishi had a super density disc that they made. And so there was almost a format war. Sony and Philips changed the name of their MMCD to DVD. So about that time that they start like making rumors that they're going to announce this, IBM, Apple, Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, and Microsoft together in August of 1995 basically said, we're only going to accept one format.
Thank God for that.
Thank you. Thank you. And DVD was it. Sony was a much bigger corporation. You know, Philips was a much bigger corporation. So they were like, okay, you win.
And I would like to talk about DivX for a minute, because DivX
did try
to be a competitor to DVD.
What came out in 1998?
It was run by, was it Circuit City?
Yeah, so this was like 3 years later after the release of DVD. So you had to have a video format. So once again, DVDs were very expensive to buy. They weren't in video stores really as of yet. Maybe they had a few of them.
Usually the stores would have like a spinner rack at DVDs. I remember going into video stores and seeing like a little spinner rack, like what you would buy comic books on.
Right.
They would have like maybe 20 DVDs.
Right. The DivX, they were mostly through Circuit City, although there were some other player retails involved. But it lasted one year.
Well, it was a terrible format.
Well, let's talk about the format. It was basically what they call vaporware, mm-hmm. which basically means you buy something and it's only good for so long and then it's disposable. Like, it no longer works.
Yeah, basically, you would put it in your player and it would trigger something within the player saying, that, oh, you played this disc now. Now you can play it for 24 more hours. And then after that, it just wouldn't work on that player anymore.
So, yeah, it was $4.50 for the initial 48 hours. And then after that, you had to pay to convert it to two more days, or you can pay a little bit more to buy it to convert it to a silver disc.
Yeah.
So they had a format, they said, for a gold standard, which is you could just buy them like off the shelf, like pre-recorded, like just like a DVD like we have now. But that never came to fruition because, look, to be able to do this, the discs were encoded with like a barcode.
Mm-hmm.
So to do this for this player to, like, if you just buy, like, a media, like, why can't you play it? The media actually had to be connected to a phone line.
Yeah,
talk about, like, a modem.
Yeah, it was terrible. And they even had exclusive titles. Like, there were some movies you could only get on DivX.
Right.
And even that couldn't save it.
Right, because that was the idea. Like, oh, you want to watch this movie? Like, you got to get it on DivX.
Yeah. The only one I can remember off the top of my head that was DivX exclusive at the time was Kevin Smith's Mallrats. I'm sure there were other ones, but I remember that was one where you could only get on DivX for the longest time. And this format crashed and burned. But when we say DivX, I'm sure what a lot of our readers are thinking about is the video format that's used by a lot of, you know, internet pirates nowadays. A lot of video files you download off the internet are tagged as DivX. And that was actually pirates slapping the media corporations in the face by naming their software bootlegging program after this vaporware program that they tried to push on consumers.
Yeah.
So now DivX is only remembered as the format of pirates who don't want to pay for movies at all.
Yeah.
So I always found that pretty ironic and fun.
Yeah. And hold on. I went to the wrong page here. But yes, it was a very short-lived format because it basically became a video codec,
yeah.
Which was actually developed by it because they had to digitally compress the videos down to fit onto just a single layer what did they call it? Like a disc, basically.
Yeah. Basically, yeah, a disc layer, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what basically became, like, so they basically used the DivX compression algorithm to basically make the format.
Yeah. To nowadays, it's used to, or for a while, it was used to pirate films.
Right. So, but there was the hold on 1 second. Where can I found the article earlier. I was reading it. That's where I got it. And I was going to find a list of stuff that you can get from DivX. And now I can't find it. There's a museum of obsolete media that you can find with DivX. Golden Eye, I think, is one of the movies. Okay, here it is. History, launch, demise. Here's a list of, I'll just read you some of the films that were available at the time. Apollo 13, Babe, Blues Brothers, Breakfast Club. A lot of older titles by this time. The Crow.
Yeah, The Crow was DivX only. I do remember that, yeah.
GoldenEye. Hackers, Hope Floats, The Jackal, Liar Liar, Mrs. Doubtfire, Mulholland Falls, Patriot Games. These are not all of them. I'm just picking out some.
Those are some highlights for sure.
Yeah.
But it's telling that you had some good movies in there, and you still could not convince people that the format was worth investing in.
No. Escape from LA?
You know, I don't need to see Patriot Games that bad.
Dragnet, Escape from LA, The Thing You Do. Yeah, so even that could not save it. It was a terrible idea.
Yeah.
This is something that these corporate people came up with and said, you know, we're not going to let the consumers decide how they're going to use this.
Yeah.
We're going to decide.
Yeah.
And we're going to come up with this system for hardware and all this other kind of stuff. And it's like, no. And they actually did a study and showed that, like, DVD sales actually slowed because they actually thought there was another format war going on. Mm-hmm. You know, because it was, people were nervous because it was like, wait, what are you doing? Wait.
Yeah, I actually didn't get into DVDs until after DivX was dead and gone. I actually waited.
Really?
Yeah.
I got in when the DVDs hit about $200. And I remember I had Christmas money, and I'm like, I'm buying a DVD player, and Netflix existed by that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can get DVDs. So I figured, you know, because not all the titles were available from the video store in DVD. Yeah. And, you know, so, and sometimes the DVD availability was actually better than the VHS.
Yeah.
At that time, too.
Because not many people had DVD. Yeah,
so if you went to Hollywood Video or you went to Blockbuster, like, you might find the movie that you want, you know.
Well, let's talk about a little bit about DVD now and how DVD really changed the game for people who watch movies at home.
Well, they really, I think, fixed a lot of the problems that you had with Laserdisc.
Yes.
Laserdisc had very sort of complicated audio formats, mm-hmm. and ones that sort of improved over time.
Yeah.
DVD didn't have any of that.
Super simple.
No. They just had, if you want to connect to other things to decode the what's on the disc, whether it be DTS or Dolby Digital, we'll just give you a digital out. And wherever the digital out technology goes, that can go with it. So now we have, like, you know, Dolby Digital Neo, you know, we have DTS Neo 6, we have, you know, Dolby Digital Atmos, and, you know, it just, like, kind of expanded after that.
And it actually increased the lines of resolution. It went up to 480.
No, it went higher than that.
No, well, they don't
blue. 500 something.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Was it 540?
Let's look. Well, let's go back to my list. 540 okay. and 270 lines of chroma.
Okay. Yeah, so see, that's a big jump. And
so this, just to reiterate, Laserdisc had 420 lines of resolution, 120 lines of chroma, and VHS had like 440 or
you said 540.
240. So VHS has 240 with
VHS. Yes.
Yeah, VHS has 240 lines of and then like 30 lines of chroma. Then you had Laserdisc with 420 lines, but like 120 lines of chroma. Then you had DVD with 540 lines and 270 lines of chroma.
Yeah. And to put that in plain speak for you, remember that most people didn't do Laserdiscs. So they went from videotape to DVD. So the jump in quality from VHS to DVD was massive for people.
Yeah.
People were blown away by how clear they were. And on top of that, again, they were small. They were compact. You could get the movies in their original aspect ratios again. And that they were priced to sell. You could get them, even at their most expensive, they were $30 at their most expensive. A lot of times you could get them for $20 or $15. And then you add in the idea of special features. Like, you could have director's commentaries, deleted scenes,
mm-hmm.
all these different things. And all this stuff kind of combined to turn Joe Average, like your average person, into a film collector for a while. Yeah. There was a time where everyone had a film collection.
Right. And then you had stores like Best Buy that had media as well as all of the electronics.
Yeah.
And so they had a
rows
media
and rows of DVDs.
Yeah. Right. So they have media. So it's not just hardware. You're now selling hardware and software, basically.
Yeah.
You know, you're selling the movies and you're selling stuff. And they're like, what, $20 a piece to buy whatever movie that you want?
And it got to the point where studios were like, it's okay if this movie doesn't do well in the theater. We'll make it all back on DVD. And right. They put out special editions of anything because people were buying them because people were just into buying DVDs for a while because of all those different factors I mentioned.
Right, and they might go ahead and release a DVD the first edition that wasn't, you know, sort of anamorphic or something like that. But then later on, they would release like the director's commentary and the special edition with like you know all of the lost footage and the deleted scenes and the. You know, all the other stuff, the alternate endings. And
there are some movies I bought in so many times because of stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if you like the movie, you're going to do that.
Right.
But eventually, that bubble burst.
Yeah.
Because of Netflix. Netflix started off as a DVD mail order company.
Right.
Got into the idea where you can watch movies on your computer. And then it became you could watch movies on your PlayStation. And then you could watch movies on your TV.
Right.
And people stopped caring about selection and quality, and they got more interested in convenience.
Right. I mean, I love Netflix, but I would get, you know, you would get, because you paid, instead of paying per rental, you paid a subscription fee, you paid a flat fee, and then you would just like mail your disc in and mail them back.
Yeah.
And then eventually got into, you know, streaming, which, you know, then you don't have to wait. Like, it's just your internet connection.
Yeah. And in the beginning, streaming was pretty cool because there weren't as many, because they hadn't figured it out yet. It was kind of the Wild West. So there weren't like, you know, licensing agreements. They could just put stuff on Netflix streaming. And nowadays they have things like where they only have certain windows where they can have it up for so long and things come and go without any warning.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix is now pushing their own materials. So you don't have as much room space for classic films. Like, if you want to see Willow or Lucas or, you know, Dragnet, you may can pay for it off iTunes. I mean, that's what we do to see them.
Right.
Or Amazon. Or you can buy it off Amazon digitally. Right. But if you want to see it on Netflix, it's not there.
No.
And then sometimes, like, maybe movies like Willow, for a couple of years, Willow was not available, period.
Right.
Like, I had friends calling me mad, like, why can't I watch Willow? Why is it not on iTunes?
Yeah.
And I would always say, I'm sorry, man. They don't have the licensing figured out.
Like, one day I had the hankering to, like, watch Major League or to watch, like, Field of Dreams because it was, you know, like getting, you know, baseball season and, like, you know, home opener. And I'm like, I want to watch, like, you know, Field of Dreams. I could not find it anywhere. Same thing, like, I wanted to watch one year for Christmas. Like, people have all these Christmas movies. Yeah. And, like, Scrooged almost always plays, you know, on the network, and like it never played. And I'm like, I want to watch Scrooge. Like, I don't want to watch. I mean, I love Elf, But I'm like, I want to watch Bill Murray
and Scrooge. Yeah.
You love Bill Murray. So I had to buy it on DVD. I mean, but you have to find it when you're there. You have to be like thinking about it. Like I want, like I need this movie now. You know what I mean? Yeah. You have to be very specific. You can't just like go and just like stumble upon it or like get it wherever that you want. Like,
And what to me, the tragedy of this is, and it is a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
That when they rejected the DivX format because the corporations were trying to say that we control what you watch.
Yeah.
Well, now they do for a lot of people because people gave up that control for the idea of convenience.
Yeah. I mean, you can now, you can rent whatever movie you want from iTunes for like $3.99 or Amazon Prime or rent all these movies from Amazon because there's a lot of stuff on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff on Netflix, but I mean,
but if they lose the rights to it, they yank it away. You don't own it.
Yeah, you don't own it. But even if you, say that you rent it, I mean, you just pay like a rental fee, like $3.99 to watch it once. Like you can't watch it whenever you want. They may lose the rights to that movie like next year.
Yeah. And like I said, for me, who likes really weird films, if, you know, sometimes there may be a weird film on Amazon Prime and it's only there for 3 months.
Right.
So if I don't see it then, I may never get a chance to see it again, and that is so weird to me.
Right.
So now when I can, like, people ask me, like, why do you still buy DVDs? Why do you still buy Blu-rays?
Mm-hmm.
And Blu-rays, of course, is the high-def DVDs format. I say to them, because no one's going to take that away from me. Like, when you want to watch Willow, you can come borrow my copy of Willow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and to me, I think it's like it's fun at this point. Let me ask you a question. When DVDs came out and they were kind of the prices that they were, I mean, how crazy did you go in buying all these like DVDs?
Oh, excuse me. When DVDs were first out, they were around $30. So I didn't buy a lot. I had a few, but when they got to like $20,
yeah,
and then they got to like the bargain bins where you get them for like $10,
yeah,
there was a time period where when I was in college,
uh-huh,
I would go to Media Play every Tuesday,
right,
and buy $60, so you'd usually two or three DVDs every week.
Wow.
And it got to the point where I had hundreds.
Wow.
And some of them I never even took out of the shrink wrap. I mean, it's like some of these I had to get rid of. I'm like, I'm never going to watch L.A. Story. Why do I have this? Oh, yeah, it's $5. I thought it'd be, I might want to watch it eventually.
Yeah.
And so eventually I purged a lot of that stuff just because I had to make space.
Uh-huh.
But even still now, if I really want something or if it's obscure that I know I may want to watch it again or just that it's rare,
right,
I'll still get it because you never know. You never know when you'll get that urge to want to watch something.
Right.
Like, you know, I've got, you know, a copy of Red Sun with Charles Bronson and Tishra Mifune.
Right.
You can't rent that on iTunes.
No.
You know, I've got a copy of The Frisco Kid with Harrison Ford and Gene Wilder. And up until recently, that wasn't on anything. It's on Amazon Prime right now, but it wasn't a year ago.
Yeah.
It may not be next year, but I've got a copy of it.
You have a copy of the original Django too, right?
I do. Yeah. I do. That movie was hard to find for a very long time. You couldn't find Evil Dead 2 to reference that one. And you couldn't find Evil Dead 2 for the longest time.
Right.
And this could all happen again because when it's just ones and zeros floating through space, they can choose to take it away at any moment.
Well, even you were mentioning before, there are movies that are, unavailable to like on different formats. So, like, in researching Laserdiscs, you know, people talk about two things I want to mention about Laserdiscs. Like, there's movies like Rad, you know, that never...
Which you can't get, yeah.
Never even made it to DVD, like,
I'll be honest with you, I have a bootleg copy of Rad for that very reason, because I found out, I wanted to watch it and you couldn't get it. I'm like, that made me a little nervous, so I went and found a bootleg copy of it, because I don't want someone to tell me I can't watch Rad if I want to watch Rad.
Or,
you know,
the biggest thing that you hear about is the original theatrical versions, or the close to the theatrical versions of the original Star Wars.
That's probably
movies.
The most famous example. You can't buy those.
Yeah, Star Wars, if you want to watch Star Wars, like, mostly unedited, it's still changed a little bit. Like,
yeah,
some of the things are cleaned up.
That's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story. But the closest to the theatrical version, they have a widescreen format, widescreen on Laserdisc that you can get, but... I mean, they even have the box set, a box set that doesn't have the special effects. Yeah. It doesn't have, you know, the extra scene with Han Solo and Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah.
It's the scene where
the ones
Han,
you and I grew up with,
Han shot first.
Yeah.
There that you can get, but I mean, the box set is like $100,
and
the individual movie themselves is like $25.
And there were a small print run of Don Animorphic DVDs that came out kind of without a lot of fanfare. They didn't make a lot of them, and they go for like $80 on the secondary market.
Yeah, like the DVD version,
and they're not even good quality. They're just they're the only legal ones out there,
right?
And so that's again goes back to what I'm talking about. That's why
there was a version that came basically with episode 1.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a special edition of episode 1 that came out that included, like, on one of the discs, one of the special edition discs comes with the original version of Star Wars.
Yeah.
But basically that is, from what I understand, just basically a copy of what's on the
Laserdisc.
Yeah.
All they did was port the Laserdisc over. And they eventually put out a box set of the special edition on DVD, like the special editions of the original trilogy. And they packed in those Laserdisc ports on a second disc.
But they said they didn't even have the original. Like, it's already been, like, cut up. They didn't know what to do. So the only way they knew what to do was to actually get a Laserdisc and actually, you know, dub it into DVD.
Which is sad and scary.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the idea of formats, movies being forgotten.
Yeah.
And, you know, not being able to have these things. And it goes back, it's going to become like the video culture origin story.
Right.
These fears, these things have all led up to us doing this.
Yeah. One last thing I want to touch on before we end, because we didn't really talk about it a lot, was HD DVD and Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah.
Just want to touch on that briefly.
Sure.
I mean, DVD went straight. I mean, we now see it as like Blu-ray as like the HD format. Like, it's full 1080.
Yeah.
You know, we have the full HD version. And I'm sure there'll be another 4K version.
Well, there's already Ultra HD, which is like the new thing. But I don't think it's going to catch on. I think that's going to be
like the 4K version.
That's going to be, I think that's going to be the Laserdisc of this generation.
Yeah. But anyway, the...
Watch me be wrong and someone play this back 3 years from now.
Well, we didn't even talk about the 3D like aspect. But
there's only so many as much
there's
time.
There's only so much, you know, obsolete crap we can talk about. But the there was another format war though that we didn't mention, which was HD DVD and Blu-ray. And the reason why is it was only, about 6 months before
it was really
it was over?
Short, yeah.
It was really super short. But they also tried to have, like, exclusives. Like, Toshiba came up with the HD DVD format. Sony came up with the Blu-ray format. And Sony said, all right, you're ready for a war? Well, go ahead.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They learned the lessons that they lost Betamax before and started licensing HD or started licensing Blu-ray to other people.
Yeah.
And Toshiba tried the same thing. They were very, very similar formats. There's not that much difference
it's
between
really not.
Them. No, they almost had the same. Like, I think Blu-ray had a little bit more storage room.
That's about the only difference.
But after about 6 months, like, Toshiba only had a couple of manufacturers involved. And Sony had more manufacturers. And the reason why is because Sony is a bigger corporation and they can provide more support for those other manufacturers who want to get into the game. So,
and part of what it was, we're talking about the idea of I want my media machines to do more.
Yeah.
Sony, of course, owns the PlayStation and they put Blu-rays into the PlayStation 3, which is one of the most popular systems of all time.
Yeah.
So people were buying these gaming systems and they're like, hey, I've got a Blu-ray player all of a sudden. I'll go buy some Blu-rays.
Right.
And in the early days of Blu-rays, on the packaging, it would have big stickers saying, you can play this in your PlayStation 3.
Right.
And they had that crossover. Gamers were like, well, okay, I can buy, you know, Speed Racer. I can buy Iron Man and then watch it when I'm done playing video games.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons they won.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons gaming systems. But I think the support from the manufacturers and the movie studios that signed on to do Blu-ray, because Toshiba tried this exclusive deal. So that was the way that they thought was going to be their advantage. They were like, okay, here's some stuff we're going to sign over exclusive. It's only going to be on HD DVD. There was about 120 or what did I say? About 125 titles or something like that were on HD DVD. Yeah. I've looked, almost every single one of them now or is it available on Blu-ray or on streaming for me.
Yeah. There was a time where some good ones weren't, but that went away about like 4 years ago.
Yeah, two to four years.
And you ago. Actually mentioned to me, but you kind of joked about getting an HDVD, and I'm like, there's really no reason to. There's, I mean, it's not retro. It's not really cool.
Yeah, no, they would. An HD DVD is backwards compatible with the DVD player, but really, there's no point in collecting HD DVDs at this point because they're all available on Blu-ray. Yeah. So if you want the HD format, I mean, they're there's not any difference. They're it's all digitals. It's all zeros and
everything.
Ones.
Everything exists on other formats, unlike LaserDisc, where there's still things you cannot get.
No.
On DVD.
No.
Like there's still commentary tracks and special edition LaserDiscs that just don't exist on DVD.
No, the only ones I found that were exclusive to HD DVD were some international titles that weren't really extremely noteworthy, at least maybe in some circles, but it's certainly not in my sort of circle. Yeah. I mean, not to say I want this format for this reason or the other reason.
Well, and it goes back to the idea, like, see, I want, and to me, that's why this is cool. And this is not just to go back to the idea of we want to preserve these films, but the idea that it's tactile and you can hold it in your hand, and no one's ever going to take it away from you, and it helps you keep that memory alive of that movie.
Yeah,
and cause you never know what will happen in the future.
Well, I will tell you, my sort of allure with LaserDiscs is the fact that this is the highest like quality format that somebody would have had at that time period of that it was made. I mean, yes, there was some overlap between DVDs between like the 90s. Like you can get The Matrix on LaserDisc.
That was the last LaserDisc produced, wasn't
no,
it?
No, it was some Scorsese movie, I think, or some.
Oh, it was Bringing Out the Dead.
Bringing Out the Dead,
which is a good movie we should cover on the podcast.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage.
It's really good.
Yeah. But you can get Toy Story. Like, I have Toy Story on LaserDisc now. Thanks to you, by the way.
Yeah.
And
hey, it was $5?
$5. Yeah. I mean, you can get The Matrix.
Man, at this point in a friendship, that's all I'm going to give you for gifts from now on because they're so affordable. Right. Your wife's going to hate me. I'm sure she already kind of resents me already.
Right. But yeah, I mean, LaserDiscs were more popular like in Japan. They were more, I think they have a more affluent society too that could buy them. And they were more invested in like the higher.
Well, this is a digression. I know we're near the end, but Japan, I know a little bit about their thing. I'm into foreign films.
Yeah.
They used to have a big rental culture. Even nowadays, you can still rent movies. There's still video shops where you can rent DVDs. You can rent Blu-rays. You can rent LaserDiscs because people just don't have space in Japan for one.
No.
So they don't have big video collections.
No, they don't want them. I mean, they just like watch a movie and then they go on. I mean, there's no reason for them to have.
Like, I've actually got a buddy. You know, he's my Facebook friend who actually runs a video store in Japan.
Hmm.
And even his little shop is probably as big as the room where we're recording this. But he's got just, you know, shelves just crammed with stuff.
Wow.
And he's considered kind of a weirdo by his contemporaries because he's super into movies and wants to have physical copies of these movies.
Right.
So there you go. We have brothers all across the world.
Well, all I know is all of these video formats completely changed how we think about movies.
It's true.
How we consume movies, how Hollywood and how other, even international, like, create movies or think about movies or think about creating them.
It's created whole industries that didn't exist before.
Right. Well, I mean, even when they think about, like, you know, they think about, well, how this movie is going to be doing a release and then how is it going to do after that and video rental and or now streaming and now exclusive streaming and, you know, how even in this home movie consumption, you now even have, you know, the FTC investigating, you know, the Oscars for excluding, you know, direct-to-video or direct-to-streams. Direct-to-streaming that are excluded from being considered
because
for Oscar.
They want to say that they're not actually movies. So the format wars are never going to go away completely. There's always going to be, like, this fear of having films at your fingertips, and that's never going to change. Just the shading around it's going to change.
Well,
but the core concepts are always going to be conflicts between the consumer and the studios.
Well, I mean, it's because when we go to the theater, it's like an experience. It's like that was the only way. I mean, to have a 16 millimeter projector unless you had a 16 millimeter or 35 millimeter projector in your house and a screen. Yeah. You couldn't watch a movie at home. You had to have all this equipment. Now all this equipment is super cheap. Mm-hmm. You know, I can have it on my phone. I can carry it in my pocket. So that's what the accessibility has, you know, we've closed that accessibility gap.
It's true. And I'm going to say something, and I think this is a good point, a good thing to end on. What has that done for us, Ryan? It's given us
less choices.
Well, it's given us less choices, but the home video formats, being able to do that, and this all this is true we've talking about today, right, has created really what we are. It's created a video culture.
It has created, yeah, a consumer video culture behind it all. Yeah. And, you know, I just want to say, too, that the inspiration for the name of our show is named after, and lovingly named after, because I don't want to, like, really, you know, steal it, because sometimes I feel like I'm stealing the name of this cult video store, rental store, that was in Murfreesboro, where I went to college. And, you know, like you were saying, like, if you wanted to watch Evil Dead 2, you could go to that rental store and they would have it. And they would be like, oh, you're watching Evil Dead 2? All right,
and
man.
And you'd talk about it. And you'd almost make a friend.
Yeah. And they would be like, oh, have you checked this out? Like, you got this?
Yeah.
Like,
have you seen Brain Dead? Or have you seen Ghoulies? Or who knows what movie? But you'd have like this exchange of ideas. And it created a fandom and a group. And again, a culture.
Yeah.
And that's going away.
Yeah.
And not to get hop on it too much, but this is our origin story. I mean, I didn't even realize that's what this would become when we started talking about this, but this is the origin story.
Well, yeah, I think that's why it's so important that we do it and that we talk about it. And that we create, like, you know, we talked about maybe doing a special episode, you know, and doing it as a one-off. And I said, no, let's put it in the stream of our shows, because I think that's where it goes, is because it's so important to talk about, because this is, our show wouldn't exist without this. Our show wouldn't, you know, to be able to, you know, watch these movies and consume these movies from long ago. Because think about in the, you know, 1970s, we want to watch a movie from the 30s or 40s, we had to wait for it to be on, you know, TV or something.
And then it would be edited. And in a lot of ways, you and I are lucky, because we're of the age where we've experienced so many different types of ways of how we consume movies and media. And we're still young enough where we're going to see more.
Yeah. And we can let all of these movies, you know, change our thought process, and we can process them, and we can analyze them, and we can look back on them and go, wow, that was really cool, or that was ahead of its time, or that was got a lot of awards, but it wasn't really that great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've already done all of those things, and we're only, you know, 15, 16 episodes in.
And when you look at our list, I know that people don't see our list, but our list is so long.
Yeah. we'll never run out of ideas.
And to me, that's a beautiful, wonderful thing. And I love sitting around talking about where we came from with this stuff, because it fills me with nostalgia. And honestly, this whole conversation has made me incredibly happy.
Yeah.
Just because we're just remembering.
Yeah.
And it reminds me how much I love this stuff. I love this stuff.
Oh, well.
And I'm excited for the next one, man. So. Oh. And I think that's a good place to wrap it up.
All right. Well, don't get teary on me.
I'm a little bit, man. A little bit.
He's getting a little.
Getting a little flimp.
Well, it's all right, man. Well, I'm really glad to, you know, to be a part of this journey. I'm really glad that all of our listeners can be a part of this journey. I would like to say in closing, you know, don't discount the movie theater and the movie theater experience. I think it's wonderful, and I think that it's great, and I think that, you know, any sort of consumption of movies, whether it be at home in your home theater or on your phone while you're on a bus ride, you know, is great.
Yeah. The important things, guys, is just let's watch some movies.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, coming out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.
Most of us want to watch a movie at home, we turn on the VCR. But a growing number of movie lovers are turning to LaserDisc players to get a better picture. Are LaserDisc players poised to make your VCR obsolete? Consumer Reports has the answer. After years of stagnant sales, LaserDisc players are starting to take off. Manufacturers are hoping that these machines will do to the VCR what the compact disc did to the LP. But after examining some of the latest models, Consumer Reports says don't rush out to buy one. There are too many trade-offs. On the plus side, you do get a sharper picture.
It has a much higher data rate bandwidth. So with all that extra information, it can translate into better resolution, less picture noise, and an overall better picture.
Sound quality is also top-notch, so you can enjoy the movie theater experience in your own living room. Today's models have another advantage. They can play a compact disc. The Consumer Report says LaserDisc players still have a lot of drawbacks. The most obvious, they can't record, so you'll still need a VCR to tape your favorite shows. And although prices have dropped, LaserDisc players are still expensive, in the $500 range. Finally, there's another price to pay. If you want to watch a movie, you have to buy it at $20, $30, or even $100 a clip. Few video stores rent LaserDiscs. So for now, don't give up your VCR. Consumer Reports says the LaserDisc you buy may not do justice to the medium. In their tests, the engineers found the discs they bought were only slightly better in quality than pre-recorded VHS tape. Carol, kind of interesting, a few years ago, these were pretty much dead, but they seem to be coming back, I think primarily because you can use some of them, as we showed in the CD players here, so people are probably starting to rediscover them again.
Well, it makes the decision a lot easier. Thanks,
Yeah, I don't
Mike.
Know if they're going to push VCRs off the market, though.
All right, thanks.